Monitor 68, with music by Andre Gagnon's orchestra. It's a new one titled, Don't Ask Why. Sunday in September. This is Brad Crandall. A new book titled This Baffling World explains various phenomena and mysteries of our time, including the amazing escapes and illusions of master magician Harry Houdini. Its author tells Monitor how the great Houdini did it immediately after Jimmy Rosselli sings one of his latest, You Are Mine.
Oh,
Many of these strange and perplexing mysteries of our time are examined in an interesting new book titled This Baffling World. Its author, John Godwin, includes the Loch Ness Monster, the Abominable Snowman, and the great Harry Houdini. Mr. Godwin reveals many of Houdini's secret escape techniques and explains the strange childhood of Houdini as he talks with Monitor reporter Betty Grobley in Washington.
John, you describe so well in your book the trick that Houdini did about being chained inside of a barrel or inside of a suitcase or a box and then being tossed in a river. Can you explain how this is done? Will you do that now, please?
Yes, great pleasure, Betty. The trick of this particular stunt, the key to it, lay in the elaborate nailing down arrangement, because while the lid of the box was still being nailed down, Houdini inside the box slipped out of his handcuffs. So he was already a free man when the box hit the water, and then it sank. As it sank, he pushed a trick panel in the box, pushed it outward, and then slammed it back shut, and so that he and the box reappeared on the surface simultaneously with the lid still firmly nailed in place. And so when people looked at the lid, the nails were all intact and the handcuffs were inside the box and Houdini was outside, which of course added to the bafflement. That was about it.
You said that he kept a little pick, too, with him all the time to get
out. Not in this particular case. He could slip out of handcuffs very nicely without the pick, but he did have his more spectacular lock-picking stunts were performed by means of a tiny picklock, which he had invented himself and could secrete on his person in a most extraordinary manner. In fact, it was quite fantastic because he could actually change the hiding places of this picklock while he was being searched.
John, you say his real name was Eric Weiss, and he's the son of a rabbi from Appleton, Wisconsin.
That's right.
How did he begin doing this? You talk about his body being conditioned at a very early age. What prompted his interest?
Well, you know, that's something that nobody knows, Betty. He was a strange child.
Was he an only child?
No, he had a brother. In fact, his brother was his partner and his manager for a while. But he was a loner, and he had a body cult fanaticism. And so far as he trained himself quite in his own volition to performing almost incredible feats of self-control and balance. And from this, he graduated to picking locks. He began collecting them like other kids collect postage stamps. And from then on to magic. But exactly what the promptings were, I don't quite know. The only thing I'd like to add is that with his body control and with the incredible striking power of his muscles that he developed, he would have made a quite murderous street fighter had he been that way inclined. It was luckily that he happened to be a very gentle person because he could literally hammer in nails with his fists. In other words, use his fists like a hammer, and what he could have done to a human skull would have been nobody's business.
You suggest, John Godwin, that he had almost a lifelong dedication to putting down the people who considered him almost supernatural.
What happened was that when he became really famous, when his stunts really began to bewilder the audiences, the spiritualist movement, both here and abroad, put it about that he wasn't a magician at all, that he was really a person of paranormal ability. And this infuriated him because he was very proud of being a magician, and he kept on telling his public, it's all tricks, remember. And the more he shouted, the louder the spiritualists became in their insistence that he actually had paranormal powers. And this became a kind of war. And he retaliated in due course by traveling around the country free of charge, exposing mediums, because, you know, there was hardly a medium alive who could escape his scrutiny because he could see through it all.
More about Harry Houdini, the great magician, including his constant war with spiritualists and his bizarre accidental death, coming up shortly on Monitor. Monitor music by Gary Puckett and the Union Gap, one of their latest.
Why am I losing sleep over you? Reliving precious moments we knew. Thank you. prison walls of my mind. There's still a part of you left behind.
John Godwin reveals more about the amazing Harry Houdini, including his running battle with phony mediums and his strange and tragic death. Part two, directly ahead on the Monitor Beacon.
No, dear, they never went to Italy.
But they've got photos of themselves riding in a gondola.
They were taken at Abraham and Strauss Manhasset store. A real gondola on a real lake. And a masterpiece reproduction of Donatello's Statue of David.
Then what about that picture of her tossing coins into the Trevi Fountain?
At A&S Hempstead store. The Trevi Fountain in replica. 42 feet long.
Michelangelo, too?
At A&S Babylon store. A full-size bronze reproduction of the Pietà.
Next you'll tell me the Sistine Chapel is in Brooklyn.
How did you know? In A&S Brooklyn store. A 50-foot illuminated replica of Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel ceiling. It's all part of Italia Bellissima, A&S Fantastic Italian Import Fair. Imagine Italy's loveliest creations.
Like Sophia and Gina?
Like Italian boutiques with extraordinary fashions. Italian craftsmen, Italian food.
Italia Bellissima. At all Abraham and Strauss stores now. It's worth a trip from anywhere.
WNBC, Radio 66, New York.
Monitor, back with you at 18 minutes after the hour. A bit earlier, John Godwin, author of a book about various phenomena titled This Baffling World, examined the amazing escape performances and childhood of master illusionist Harry Houdini. He continues his visit with Monitor reporter Betty Grobley.
He and his wife were quite extraordinarily close. This was an ideal marriage, such as you find very, very rarely. When they married, he was so poor that his wife had to pay for the marriage certificate. And he had never forgotten her for that, and this became a sort of a lifelong adoration. When the spiritualist war was raging, he gave her his word that if there was any way at all by which he could get in touch with her after his death, he would do so. And if she didn't hear from him, then she could take for granted there was no way. And the point after his death was, he died rather young, as you know, was that mediums kept cropping up all the time, telling this wife that hurt from Houdini, and keeping her confused and off-balanced and rather unhappy. But the natural fact was that she herself never heard from him directly at any time, so whatever that
was. John, how did he die, and how old was he?
He was about 49, and he died through an example of our idiot youth. One of his stage tricks, you might say, which wasn't really a trick, was that he had incredibly strong stomach muscles, and he appeared on stage with local champion boxers and would give them permission to punch him in the stomach as hard as they could. The point was that he took time off to flex his muscles first, and their fists just bounced off.
Yes.
But he was visited in his dressing room by three students, one of whom was a real prize idiot, and who unexpectedly lunged a full force blow into Houdini's stomach before Houdini could flex his muscles, thereby rupturing him internally and causing his death through internal bleeding. And within 3 or 4 days, in fact, he appeared on stage while in absolute agony and finished his performance and then died the night afterwards.
You can read about Houdini, you can read about the abominable snowman, restless coffins of Christchurch, in a book by my guest, the book, This Baffling World, my guest, John Godwin. This is Betty Grobley for Monitor.
Here's a new one from the irrepressible Engelbert Humperdinck, Les Bicyclettes de Belle Size.
Turning and turning, the world goes on. We can't change it, my friend. Let us go riding now through the days together.
This week in Australia, a man and woman were married. Nothing unusual about that, except for the fact that the bride was 78 years old and the groom was 82. And if you're wondering whether marriage at that age merely means companionship, listen carefully to our nationally known columnist and psychologist, Dr. Joyce Brothers.
Sorry, but that award-winning picture, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, guessed wrong in one important area. It assumed that for the parents of the bride and groom, the physical side of love was a matter of memory. Tain't necessarily so, say the experts. They've been saying it for more than a decade, but movie makers, and a lot of other people, seem not to have been listening. Now a progress report on a continuing study at Duke University repeats the verdict. An active love life is not the exclusive property of the young. The Duke University study of the medical aspects of aging was begun in 1954. 254 men and women volunteered to serve as subjects. Their average age when the project began was 71. Now some of them are in their 90s, and some of these are still enjoying marital relations. Most of those who gave up in the years between did so not because of age or lack of desire, but because of the loss of a spouse. When a partner was available, the survey showed a development that should scotch for once and for all the notion that aging implies impotence. Dr. Eric Pfeffer reported it to the American Psychiatric Association recently. What was not anticipated, and what is evident from our data, he said, is that a significant portion of elderly subjects, when followed over a period of years, may show a rising pattern of sexual activity and interest. Some do not, of course. Dr. Pfeffer's study found that if a couple ceased marital relations, it was usually the desire of the male. and this often for mistaken or insufficient reason, according to Dr. William Masters of the St. Louis Reproductive Biology Research Foundation. Marital relations are often needlessly ended after a prostate operation, for instance. Dr. Masters' research has found no physical necessity for this premature retirement in most cases. The cause, he says, is psychological. He is now studying the possibility that intercourse is less frustrating to heart patients than continence. He's also found that men often deny themselves physical love in middle age in order to save the ability for later years. This is a grave mistake, he warns. The ability to express bodily love was not given us, apparently, to be hoarded, but to be spent. In extensive studies, Dr. Masters has found that the capacity remains longest in those who have consistently used it. This is Dr. Joyce Brothers for Monitor.
Enjoy the interesting comments of Dr. Joyce Brothers on all subjects, all about people, every weekend on Monitor. Trains and boats and planes. Monitor enjoyed elsewhere in the nation by your friends and relatives. For instance, Garden City, Kansas hears us on KIUL. All stations do the name-dropping bit now, after which Monitor returns. I'm Brad Crandall.